Hi there. Welcome to our very first episode of Content Talks, a new 5x5 podcast that explores the fascinating, ever-evolving world of content strategy. Every week, we'll be featuring conversations between me, Christina Halverson, and some very smart, witty folks who have very interesting things to say about things that will most certainly interest you. For our inaugural show, I felt it was only right to invite Ms. Anne Rockley to be my first guest. Ever. Anne is the author of Managing Enterprise Content, a Unified Content Strategy, published in 2002. And she's the president and owner of the Rockley Group, an internationally recognized organization that specializes in the design and development of structured content strategies and management. Anne, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. We've had multiple technical failures. So we're just going to go with it and hope that Mr. Dan Benjamin can work his magic on whatever our final file turns out to be.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So Anne, I first came across your book probably in about 2004 when I started calling myself a content strategist, even though I wasn't quite sure what that meant, and sort of typed it in and there you were right at the top. And I got it and I thought, holy crap, I don't know any of this stuff. So tell me a little bit about the work that you were doing in the late 90s and the genesis of sort of deciding this book needed to be written and you were going to sort of put your life on hold, which is what happens when we write books, to do it.
Well, in the late 90s, early 2000s, we had a really, really hot high-tech market. And my role in that market was in helping organizations to move towards content management for customer-facing content. And unlike yourself, it wasn't just about the web.
Right.
And I was responsible for helping organizations to do print, to do help, to do web, to do e-learning, to do marketing materials, to do all sorts of different things, very much multi-channel, multidisciplinary type content. And I'm a pretty structured kind of person. And I just like to do things with a methodology, I guess you'd say. And we would train people all the time over and over and over again on how they should look at their content, how they should make decisions about it, how they pick the right tools, all those sorts of things. And we realized that after doing that often enough, we pretty much had a book. So, actually, when the bubble burst and the technology went just insane there for a while, it was a wonderful opportunity to write the book. And
you had some downtime.
So we did.
Yeah, great. Well, so what you're talking about in terms of sitting down with organizations and saying, here's how you need to look at your content. You need to look at it holistically rather than just these materials over here and just this database content over here and so on. This, for a lot of organizations today, is like this radical new notion that they could ever even begin to get their arms wrapped around it. Why would people call you? Like, what was it that sort of would trigger this realization that there certainly could be some sort of streamlining or at least some sort of governance of the content that was being created?
Lots of pain. It could be call center pain in the sense that they weren't able to answer customer questions properly, effectively, quickly. It could be issues of translation. So they found that they were spending phenomenal amounts of money translating content and translating it over and over and over again. Reuse plays a big part in what we do. It was the whole issue of, it's not just about print, it's not just about the web, it's not just, you know, it's all these different things, and they couldn't figure out how to get their arms around it. And so that's when I get a phone call.
And where would you start? I mean, the organizations that are calling brain traffic right now, my consultancy, their point of pain to begin with is their web content and the, you know, tens of thousands of pages that have been out there forever. And yeah, once we get in there and start digging around, it becomes very clear that the website is just a symptom of a much larger ailment. So when you would walk in sort of like the doctor and begin to diagnose, how would you begin to get your arms around that?
Well, we always do what we call a substantive audit. And it was a process where the first thing we did was we talked to people and find out where the pain points are. Then we would sit down and take a look at the content. And we always said, think big, act small. So I always asked to get samples of the information that gave a broad-based understanding of what the company was creating from all the different areas that they felt should be part of this content management strategy. And we would never implement across the enterprise all at once. It's just not feasible. But we would look at many, many different representative areas and pinpoint where we could see the path of content. So it was getting created over here, and it was moving into here, and then it was rewritten over here, and then it was pushed over to the web over there, and then it was modified on the web, but it didn't get modified back here, et cetera, et cetera. So yes, it's huge. You can't do it all. We did decide to look at customer-facing content versus everything that an enterprise delivers, and that did cut it down a bit, but still, it could be very large.
So when people would call you, who was it typically that first sort of said, this is a pain, there must be a remedy, and I have, you know, I'm empowered enough to be able to start the wheels turning to do something about this? What was usually their role within the organization? And let's go ahead and move the conversation forward to today, because you are doing much the same thing now that you were doing back then, correct? I mean, obviously with methodologies evolved.
Yeah. Technology changes, content changes, but the methodology does not. It's the same. We haven't really had to change our methodology at all. So the people who call us today are typically in charge of communications. They may be in marketing communications. They may be they could be a regulatory communications for the life sciences industry. So it could be someone potentially in a e-learning. It could be someone in customer support. Anybody who has to manage content somehow and knows there's got to be a better way.
And there is a better way. So tell me about then, are you able to share some success stories? I mean, tell me first about maybe where you had one sort of quick win. I mean, I know that's what people who are going for larger budgets are always looking for. I need a quick win to be able to build a business case, to be able to do this right. Tell me about some of the things that you've been able to do to really prove the power of your methodology on that smaller scale before you were sort of given access to or asked to really tackle the broader scope.
Well, there can be a couple of areas of quick wins. I always look to see if an organization is doing translation. Because if you're doing translation, it costs a phenomenal amount of money. And if you actually have a handle on your content, you can reduce those costs quite significantly. And we can show a return on investment usually under a year when a company is translating their content. We've often also showed it with customer support. So in being able to focus on the customer support side of things, we will then get all of the call centers, the self-serve, the web, everything all in line, and they can see significant reductions in time on call and complaints, things like that. We've had regulatory groups who have been able to reduce risk very quickly by getting a handle on their content and what you're allowed to do with that content and how it's produced and things like that. And they've been able to show pretty quick wins.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about that, what you just said about that what you're allowed to do with your content. What do you mean by that?
Well, too often what you see when you go into an organization is really kind of like the Wild West, in the sense that there's a lot of different groups and they're all creating content, and they might have some templates. Maybe, maybe not. They often don't have style writing guidelines. They don't have ownership of content. Half the time they can't even figure out who wrote the content in terms of keeping it up to date. They don't, if you're going to change content, there's no controls over who can change it or not. There's no responsibility for who has to make sure that it's always up to date. I mean, those things are just not there. Everybody's running, running, running. They've got a deadline. They need to get something created. They need to get something out there, and then, oh, gone. Okay, I'm on to the next one. And so you don't have a handle on it. You don't have control. You don't, you are not, you do not have a governance strategy for your information.
And so what does that mean? What is a governance strategy, and how do I get one?
Well, a governance strategy is a plan of action, how you're going to manage that content. So who owns it? Who is allowed to change it? What is the method for determining when content needs to be changed and updated? So do you review it every 6 months? Do you review it once a year? Does it automatically expire? Also, in terms of the review cycle, we get a lot of different product managers who say, well, I want this this way, and I want that that way, and I want something the other way. Mm-hmm. Well, governance also involves ensuring that you get all your stakeholders in line, and they have an understanding of the impact of change or lack of change. And so just putting those rules in place in terms of the entire content life cycle, who owns it, who can do something with it, who reviews it, how does it get signed off? What can be done to content? What's allowed to go out there? Everything like that.
And how, so we have that. We have these magical, you know, guidelines that we've created, you know, somehow gotten alignment on. How, what is the process of actually maintaining those or overseeing it or actually actively keeping those governance policies and standards in place?
Well, you do need a champion, and I typically recommend, depending on how large the project is or what the scope is, but a content coordinator or an enterprise content coordinator or a stakeholder type team that meets on a regular basis to determine on continuing, how are you going to continue to control your content? You obviously need education. It's not enough just to put the guidelines out there and expect that people are going to follow them. People don't like structure.
You like structure.
Yeah, I like structure.
Well, and we always...
But you know, it's a sign of maturity in an organization. Because you know, when you got a startup and they're doing this, that, and the other thing, and I mean, it's wonderful and they're brilliant. But at a certain point, you just can't have everybody with their fingers in the pie. You and just can't do that.
Now, tell me though. Okay, so let's go back to my question earlier. Can you describe this actually being put in place? Can you tell the story of how an organization got from the wild, wild west to, you know, the structure that was needed to be able to streamline all these costs and ensure that content reuse was in place? How, tell me what that looks like in action.
Okay, so they analyze their content, they make decisions about it, so that's done. Then
do you? I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt. Are you able to present sort of like what happened with a client specifically?
A specific client?
Yeah.
They always make it difficult for you.
Oh, I know. Are you able to say, sorry, I should have asked this before the podcast. Are you able to just say this one company we worked with? Let's go like that.
Yes, I can do that.
Okay.
Okay, so one company we worked with in the medical devices arena, they were responsible for creating a lot of content, web, patient, physician, nurses, just all sorts of different types of things, customer support, those sorts of things. And what they did, as I said, they analyzed their content. They determined how they wanted to manage that content. They built templates. They created structured writing guidelines. They developed training materials. They trained. First, what we did was we brought in people who were kind of open to the idea of change, and we worked with them a lot during the development cycle. So they then became evangelists as we went forward.
And how did you do that? What was it that happened? Was it just more conversation? Was it almost like an internal sales process on your part? What kinds of things were you showing them or demonstrating to them that would finally get that light bulb to go on?
Well, actually, we often sat down and did an analysis together with their content and went, look at it here, look at it here, look at it here, look at it here. Mm-hmm. And they don't look at all their content. They don't see that. They're focused on their own area, and they're not always aware of all the pain points of everyone in the organization. So finding out what's working and what's not working and then relating that back, it's like, whoa, we had no idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, they know the costs or they know time or something like that, but they don't know pain points. So we educate them as to where the problem spots are. We point out the problems in the content. We put together ROIs to show them what that is costing them mm-hmm. to continue to work in the way that they're doing. And it can be hard dollars, but it can also be reputation. It can be legal liability. It can be all sorts of different things. So that you figure out what the hot button is mm-hmm. in each organization and you use it to build the case, the business case, to show them how mm-hmm. they can do it differently.
Mm-hmm. And so I want to go back to the governance thing just really quickly. How are those, what tools do you give them to be able to do that without people freaking out about the structure or whatever? I mean, I know that one thing that a lot of organizations think is, well, if I have the right technology and just sort of force them to create their content in this way or to manage it in this way, then that'll work and that'll standardize everything. And of course, that's always a crashing failure because, you know, using that technology are people with yes, feelings. Yes. So what are some of those tools?
Well, definitely technology does play a part, but education plays a much bigger part and evangelists play a big part in helping to convince others that this is a worthwhile thing to do. Mm-hmm. And whenever we're enacting change, we have change agents, we may have people within the organization that are used to helping people change. And we show them why the value. So we don't just train people in a room and say, this is how you do this and this is how you do that. We say, this is what you told us. This is what we saw. This is what we came up with. This is what the response is, so that they're always understanding why. You don't just tell somebody to do something. They need the background understanding. And they're much better at adapting when they understand the why and not just the how. Mm-hmm. And we just keep building that the benefits and everything associated with it. So we're just constantly dealing with the people all the way through. Mm-hmm. I don't like doing skunk works. I don't like when it's just a core group of people who are doing something and then they go back and they tell everybody what they're supposed to do. It has to be very participatory. You have to bring in lots of people from all over the place so that they feel that they are part of that solution. And you show them how you're helping them to solve their problems. And yeah, they may not like the template that you picked or the color that's going on here or something of that nature, but always keeping an open ear to what their feedback is. And we found a lot of people, you know, in the beginning, change is always painful. Nobody likes it in the beginning, but give them enough time to adapt. And obviously with the right support structures. I had a funny incident, I guess it was 2 years ago at a conference. And somebody came up to me and she said, I don't know if you remember me. I work at, and she gave the name of the company. And of course, I remembered the company, and she had been one of the writers in the group. And she said, well, I'm now the manager of the team, da-da-da-da-da. And she said, I just wanted to let you know that I used to hate your guts. Oh. And it was like, okay, what does one say to that?
Again, have you changed your hair? You look great.
But she went on to qualify that. She said, because she really didn't like the structure. She didn't like doing it that way, she said. But after a few months, she and the other members of the team adapted. And by moving towards a structure, they weren't having to waste their time on all of the things that were driving them crazy before, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it happened to be. And she said, we were able to do more. We were able to do some really innovative things that we were not able to do before because we didn't have the resources or we didn't have the time. Mm-hmm. And she's like an evangelist now. She loves it. And she would not have it any other way. So change is painful, but you do come out the other side.
They may hate your guts for a while. Yeah. But then they come around. Right, exactly. Because people need to understand how great structure is, like you do. So, yeah.
Right.
So let's take a look just real quickly. We keep talking about it, and we keep talking about structure, and we keep talking about this new way of doing things. Can you describe a little bit? I'll set sort of the Wild West, put a little more detail around that. So, and in fact, let's just go back and focus on a customer service team, for example. So we have call scripts in the customer service team. We have training materials for people who come in new. We have ongoing training materials from different folks that we pull in to talk to the customer service people. We have emails that are coming in that need to be responded to. We have new products and services that they need to be updated on. Obviously, all this content is coming in from all over the place, and they're expected to create more content to respond to it or to put some of these initiatives into action on the front lines. What does it look like when it's not a disastrous mess like that after the content strategy has been identified and begun to be rolled out?
Okay, so we would have a set of content models, which would then be reflected in a set of templates and guidelines so that how does one respond to an email? How do you put together training materials? How do you take product information from square one, from its initial inception in marketing, right through to the call center? We make sure that the call center is not just a wall that you toss things over into. We make sure that everything that we're doing feeds in, and they have almost like a dashboard of content that they can then access.
So in other words, they are structuring the way you need to give them content. They're saying, if you want to come to us and give us this information, these are our inputs, and this is how we need to receive it from you. Otherwise, you know, it is going to be lobbed over the wall and somebody may or may not pick it up.
Right. And that's where it becomes a unified content strategy. So it's about the call center, absolutely. But it's about all the content creators and all the other things that they're creating for their jobs that they need to do to assist the customer as well. So it's beginning to end. It's a content lifecycle. It's the whole thing. It's not just this silo being the call center, this silo being marketing, this silo being usage and support, this silo being training. It's not, you cannot silo them. You've got one customer and they don't know where content's coming from. They shouldn't care. It has to be a uniform and a unified strategy right from beginning to end.
So, Anne, at the beginning of our conversation, one of the first things you said was content is not just the web. It is everything. And that has been over as the conversation about content strategy has sort of become this huge tide that is, you know, sweeping over all different kinds of disciplines throughout our industries and organizations. That is something that has sort of, it's arisen in your community, which, you know, the intelligent content community, the folks that are working on structured content, et cetera, as sort of a commentary to the work and the attention that more web-focused content strategy is getting. Can you talk a little bit about why it is that you think that people are responding now to content strategy, where, you know, 8-10 years ago, it was sort of being buried by all the other shiny baubles, the technology, you know, then SEO and blogs and so on and so forth. Can you talk a little bit about what you think has shifted and that needs to sort of evolve now that we have people's attention?
I think there are many things that have caused the shift in the early days, and it still is true in some cases. Everybody wants to talk about the tool. You know, they always want to talk about the tool. Well, people now are realizing that it's not just about the tool. They can have the best tools in the world, but they're still having problems. They're still having unhappy customers. We have just come out of a very difficult economic situation around the world. We're still coming out of it. And companies do not have the ability to turn customers away, to alienate customers, to have their brand be received in a very negative way because of something not working well, getting bad reputation, whatever it happens to be. And so they're starting to pull back and saying, well, you know, the tools, yeah, we got great tools, but it's all about the content. It's what we put out there. It's what we say. It's how we say it. It's the ways in which we say it. It's the ways in which we deliver it. It's the ways in which we communicate. And I think that, I think it's tremendous. I think it's a level of maturity in that the industry as a whole is saying that we now realize it's not just about any particular delivery media. Is not just about the tools. It's all about the content. That's what's important.
You know what I think is so interesting that I was just talking to a friend about recently. This, much like I think the unified and intelligent content community has been saying, hey, wait a minute, this is not just about the web as the conversation has sort of exploded within user experience design, but mm-hmm. that community is now looking at marketing and saying, hey, wait a minute, this is not just about marketing here. This is not just about marketing content. And, you know, they've picked up with content marketing and how to do that and starting to really look at the quality of your content and what you're saying and when you're saying it and so forth. And my take is that marketers are simply the first people to jump on trends, and that's indicative of the fact that content strategy is becoming a trend, that looking at the quality of the content, how it's being done, the cost of it, how it can be done better, et cetera, is in fact something that's coming to the forefront. And I do agree with you that I think it's simply a sign of maturity within organizations to sort of realize, oh, gee, going out and joining the conversation just sort of made our content problems worse because now we have all this content out there that we don't know where it is and who's responding to it and so on.
Right.
So, go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say that, you know, when you say it's not about the web and it's not about the conversation, and I think we're seeing an explosion with smartphones and e-books and tablets, and it's just like content, where do you want it? No problem. And it just, we have to look at it mm-hmm. in a much more intelligent mm-hmm. way.
Well, not only where do you want it, but where do I want it as the end user?
Yes.
You know, I expect to have it wherever I want it, and it better be consistent, and it better give me what I want,
exactly,
no matter where it is that I'm accessing it.
Or I'm going to leave because I don't have to look at it.
Yep, exactly. So something that you and I have talked about previously was this notion that finally being able to put kind of a story that people could relate to, specifically around the content that they could take away, that was easy, that was memorable, beginning to, you know, have people kind of craft metaphors and so on about why content is such a pain point and why we really need to understand it. It's my opinion that pointing to, and we've talked about this too, that beginning with the website, because it's such a painful and obvious problem where your content is sort of out there oozing and horrible for the entire world to see, that's kind of an easy foot in the door, right? To sort of say, yep. Hey, this exists because of your content problems within your organization, which, you know, as you've been talking about, often back into problems with the people you are or are not assigning to manage that content and so on. So I think that talking about the web has been a really good sales tool for content strategy. What, mm-hmm. What other sales, like how else would you encourage people to talk about this? If somebody listens to this conversation and they're just jumping up and down and saying, yes, this is the vision that I have. This is what I want. I can only do it, you know, by starting with this, this, and this. What kind of advice would you give to somebody about that?
Well, as you said, certainly starting with the web, starting with social, but you know, I think it's starting with the customer. Starting with how do you interact with your customer and where are they most involved, and then moving from there into how you then support that customer contact. Where are all the touch points for your customer?
Have you ever started work with a client and realized that they don't necessarily talk to their customers or work with their customers, and that it is really sort of a, we're going to design these products and tell you what you want? What happens then?
That happens all the time.
Right.
There may be somebody in the organization who's talking to the customer, but certainly it never filters down into all the people who are creating the product and the people who are having to create all the communication around that product. People have been really divorced. I think with the explosion of social media, they're much less so, because they are getting customer input all the time, very quickly. They do something wrong.
Right,
it's
right.
out there.
Yeah, right.
And so they're getting their fingers burned, and they're learning that they have to listen. They have to listen to the voice of the customer.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, and so again, going back to, so finding the people who talk to the customer, then that would be a really good place to start, just sort of doing a little digging and networking and getting to those people. What are some other sort of sales tools that you would recommend to folks who are wanting to get the ball rolling with getting to an actual unified content strategy?
I always suggest that they look for oops or major mistakes or things that have cost the company in some way. And because those are measurable, they hurt. And you can typically develop a best practice way to address or prevent those sorts of things in the future. Mm-hmm. And it's something where you can say, hey, we can prevent this, we can do this, we can, you know, this happened, but this would mitigate it in the future. It's always, I have found, come down to building the business case, talking the language of senior management. So I think that one of the problems we often see is that people, they know how to write, they know their stuff, they know they're good designers or whatever it is, but they don't speak the same language as senior management. They don't have the same vocabulary. They don't know how to say this is important. They're too much in the weeds, and they have to be able to get above that and find out where the organization, where the concerns are at the upper level, and then be able to put their content strategy and what they're going to do with it in the context of those senior stakeholders. Mm-hmm. Because when you do, they get it. Mm-hmm. And then they're supportive.
And that is, you know, the age old sales strategy: sell to their pain. Exactly that.
Yes,
find out what hurts them, and then how content strategy can fix it. So if I were, then this will be my last questions, and then we'll wrap up. If I thought that I was going to be able to get an audience with senior management, and I'd identified, you know, let's say that, well, and I had identified that I had this one chance to sort of speak with them, to give them this vision of what a unified content strategy might look like. What are sort of the three defining factors or qualifiers that you would say, bring them this, because this is what you can have?
Bring them a list of the pain points. Bring them a list of how you will address those pain points, not at the nitty-gritty level, at a very top strategic level. Bring them the numbers. Bring them ROI. And bring them, and I know it's getting into a fourth year, a realistic plan of action that's not going to cost millions of dollars. You know, maybe it's a phased approach. Maybe it's you're going to focus in on this one area. Whatever it is, you've done all your due diligence, and you are prepared to answer all of the questions.
Great. Well, people have some homework to do.
Absolutely.
And this has been so great. And for listeners, you can see exactly why I wanted to kick off this series with Anne. She has been talking about content strategy this eloquently and this passionately for the past decade. And I hope that you will continue to add your voice to the conversation for decades more, because, you know, as we keep saying, there is a lot of work to do and a lot of opportunity for folks to introduce content strategy to their organizations and begin to make a pretty significant difference in the way things are done and the kinds of ROI that people are seeing from their content. So, Anne, thank you so much for your time today. It was a pleasure and an honor, as always. And this has been the first episode of Content Talks, a podcast series about content strategy. I'm your host, Christina Halverson. You can find me on Twitter at Halverson, HALVORSON. And if people want to follow you on Twitter, what's your handle?
At A Rockley.
At A Rockley, R-O-C-K-L-E-Y. Terrific. Correct. All right. Thanks so much, everyone, and we'll see you next time.